You know how you can tell when you really love your job? You really love your job when you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning with thoughts of software architecture dripping through your brain and you just can't wait to get to your computer and try them out. And that's what happened to me today. It's Saturday morning. I'm still in my pajamas, you know, been here working on stuff, but I've come up with some pretty cool stuff. And it all started from this little spike investigation about faults and fault exceptions and what you should do, which I've been posting on my blog. So I got to thinking about really what's some of the key issues here about validating data that's passed to your service. And what would you want to get when people send data to you? How do you want to deal with their validation logic? Where do you want to put it in terms of the overall architecture? What's really the best practice here? Now, I've come up with a strategy. You might disagree, but I'm going to show it to you today. And if you disagree, tell me what you do instead. Maybe you got some better idea. We can all learn from each other. Okay, so let's get started. First of all, you see here, I've left some little notes in the task so you can look at, you can take this little tour through the code later on your own if you want. So the first thing we want to look at here is I have a service that's that takes in a parameter here of data. And it just says, well, if the data is less than zero, then I'm going to throw an argument out of range exception. Okay, that's bad. Why is that bad? Because argument out of range exception is what I think of as an internal exception type. It's a type that's appropriate for internals of your code. But to someone who's consuming this over a web service, this exception does not make sense outside of your country. Okay, your code is your country, and you're just tossing something outside of the boundaries of your country that makes no sense out there, and it's not a good idea. Don't do this. You should not do it. All right, so what should you do instead? Let's look at the second option. So here's a second option, which is better. So again, we take an int as a data, and then we do our little validation, only now we're actually going to build up a fault code and a fault exception. So this is really, there's a lot of tricky complexity things here, but if you look at the SOAP specification, the notion is when you send a SOAP fault, there's some codes that are somewhat standardized. Now, you don't have to use the specific list from this spec, but one idea is that you can say, hey, sender, this is your fault. You sent me something I can't consume, and don't send me that again. Okay, so what we want to do is create a fault that the sender knows that there was something wrong with their message. Otherwise, they'll just get an exception and it looks to them like there was a problem with the server. They might try to send it again. So what we want to do is send a sender fault. Now, there is a method to send a sender fault, but it's not version aware. So remember, there's two versions of the SOAP specification. There's SOAP V1 and SOAP SOAP V1.1 and SOAP V1.2. And they differ in how fault codes are dealt with. Now, it depends on the binding that you're using as to which version of SOAP you're using. So if you're using basic HTTP binding, you're using SOAP 1.1. If you're using any other binding, then you're using SOAP 1.2. All right, so what I needed to do was have a little bit of code here that does the right thing depending on whatever SOAP version is in use. And so I've got a little factory here that will look at what version of SOAP we're talking, and then it will create the correct kind of fault code. All right, so that's what that does. Now we throw a fault exception. This is better. It's better, but the one thing that bothers me about this is this parameter, this little validation rule, if data is less than zero. Now, this is kind of a trivial example, but you know, let's say that we had this notion of this entity, this thing we call data. And we say, in our world, in our country, data should never be less than zero. Now, it could be that we have hundreds of methods that in types and things that use this little thing called data all over the place. And maybe we had some programmers who didn't quite understand, so maybe in some places that said less than or equal to zero. And then we've got a problem because our validation's inconsistent. In some places it's always less than zero, some places it's less than or equal to zero. And then who knows, maybe tomorrow we change the rules and we decide less than and equal to zero is fine and everything should be that. If we got this rule kind of sprinkled all over our world, our service world here, then we have a lot of work to do to go track it all down, find all the places where it's referenced and change the rules. And anyway, so just, you know, for a simple little service, yeah, I guess that's okay. But I was thinking we could do better. Now, what would it take to do better? Well, look at this one. This case here, this makes me smile. It took me a while to figure this out, but it's really cool. So you see here that we call in, we get, instead of a int data, we get a get data request. So this is a data contract type that I have created to wrap up all the pieces of the request. And then you notice I have no validation here. So where is the validation done? Well, by the time we get here, I have a little comment that says it's already been validated. So let's go look at get data requests and see how we can get there. Now if I hit F12, bam, it takes me to get data request. And if I look in here, I see right here, notice how we use a type called foo. All right, so I have this data request here. It's got fields and other fields, and I did some things for versioning support in it, and you know, you can study that if you want. But this foo is another interesting piece. What does foo do? Well, let's look at foo. It again is a data contract, and it has inside of it our little friend data. Okay? And so the idea is by encapsulating data in a property, now, because of the getter and setter, with the setter I can apply validation rules. Alright, so here in the setter I'm going to do a little try-catch. And why am I doing that? Because I use another class called foo-validator to validate the value. Now you might ask, Ron, why don't you just validate it here? Because, I'll tell you why. Because I want to be sure that the validation rules are applied both whenever we're at a service boundary and also deep inside the bowels of our business logic. All right, so now if I look at this guy right here, and I'm going to use a little resharper help here to tell me, where does this thing get used, this validate data value? Well, I see that it gets used in two different projects. One is the WCF contracts project here. That's the one we've been looking at. It's also used in the business logic. Oh, see, and there's another type here called internal foo. And we see that internal foo also uses validate data value. Now, it doesn't do a try-catch block. It just does the validate and lets the internal exceptions fly because it's meant for internal use down deep inside the business logic of my app. Now, there's two sides of the validation. Okay, one side is, can you validate the value that somebody's trying to set a value on my object? And I just want to validate it. And then there's another side, which is, let's validate the state of this object as a whole. Now, sometimes you have rules about validation that depend on more than one thing. So I created a kind of a crazy rule for validate state. Let's go look at that. And a validate state's rule says that if the text is not null or empty, then the rule is that the text length has to be less than whatever data is. That's kind of a crazy rule, but I just wanted to make a rule that applies to two things. So now, this rule could fail if you set the text or if you set the data. And so you can't know if this rule succeeds until after you set them. Okay, so the idea is that whenever you set the data, first you validate the value, then you set the value, and then you validate the state, so you can see that process here. Now, in my foo class, which is in the contracts project, because it's in the contracts, I know it's a data contract, it's meant for the service boundary. In this class, I can't just let exceptions like argument exception fly. I have to catch them. And so what I'm going to do is catch the argument exception, and I'm going to turn it into a soap fault. And so that's what we see here, this create fault from exception, which has, you know, a lot of wonderful deep code that shows how I look at what thing is and create the argument fault and all that. And you can look at it if you want to, but it's pretty cool. And then, now the next thing we want to do is let's just run this app. Let's run it so that we can see what it does here, okay? So I built a little web UI, and the web UI and the service all live in the same website. They could be in different ones, but just to make this easy in one web project, I have them all together. And so we see here that if I invoke the service, what I'm actually doing is invoking all three services so I can see the difference between the scenarios. So the first scenario is when we throw the argument out of range exception. That's that internal type. And you can see that if we don't have the service debug behavior giving us the exception details, this is what you get. And I think we've all seen this. You know, it's just, I don't know, something went wrong with the server. I don't know what it is, right? And you can see that it says that the fault code name is internal service fault, which implies that whatever went wrong was some problem on the server. And this is really not what we want, because really the problem is that I sent a negative one. That's not the server's fault. The server is working exactly correct. It's doing what it should do. Now here's the second option where we threw a fault exception, just a regular fault exception. And we see that it says, is sender fault is true. That means, hey sender, it's your fault. You did it, pun intended, right? And then we can pass a reason string, which is nice. We get a little, okay, the argument data is out of range, value must be greater than zero. Okay, that's kind of cool. And then the third one, which is kind of the booyah, is like the massive, you can send as much stuff as you want and all kinds of incredible detail, is when you use a fault exception of T detail. And this is when we use a fault contract. The details allow me to specify whatever I want, really. And so it's kind of up to me is what I want to say. So I thought, okay, well, I'll send in the specific name of the argument that was invalid, what the actual value was, the validation rule that I'm applying, and then the reason. And then I also have a link to a little help page. So if you go, oh, okay, so here's my rules on the foo entity, right? So yeah, it's kind of cool. You could do whatever you want there. So that's the difference of the three. Now let's go back to our task list, and so we already saw how we use a foo in our request message. We saw how we delegate to the foo validator. We saw the foo validator throws internal exception types, so you can use it anywhere, and conversion. All right, so here's where we got ahead of ourselves. Here's where in the web app where I catch that exception. And so you can see when I catch the exception, first of all, I have to check to see that the fault detail's not null. And then if it is, I can just format this wonderful string that we saw with the details like argument name. And you see it's kind of strongly typed here, the actual value, the validation rule. So it's not just like a dictionary, or you can access fault details as XML, but this gives you a nice kind of strongly typed experience. So let's go look at where that was called from. So you see here where I can catch a fault exception of T, right? And I abort my proxy and then I call into that to get the text. Darn cool stuff. Now, let's look at one last thing. When I was working with this, I inadvertently discovered something. And at first I thought, oh, I should get rid of that. But then I realized, no, this is actually kind of cool. And the idea was, so far what we've seen is okay. It's really cool, actually. But somebody might say, well, Ron, you know, you had to call the service to find out that the value you sent over there was bad and get back this fault exception. Maybe what you'd like to do, particularly if this is your app, like you're writing the website part, you're writing the service part, or maybe two different teams in the same company or something like that. Maybe you might say, look, we're okay with sharing this validation logic between the website and the service. Now, people typically hesitate to do this in service-oriented situations because they say, well, you know, if we share code, we end up very tightly coupled with an implementation, which is true. And in some cases, you're willing to do it. If you want to do it, I'm going to show you how. Okay, and I put some little instructions in the remarks here. So the first thing we have to do is change our service reference configuration, all right? So I've configured my service reference. Let's go find it. Here's our service reference. So let's look at configure. Now I have configured it to not reuse types in reference assemblies. Okay, So that means anything the contract needs gets regenerated in my service reference. If I change this to reuse the types, okay, and then what I want to do is add a using. Okay, so I'm going to say I need to use the servicevaults.wcf.contracts. Okay, because now the types that I needed are no longer generated in the reference for me. So the argument validation fault and the foo, the get data request and all that stuff. Now, check out the difference when I do this. Okay, first of all, let's run it. Okay, so if I invoke the service, you really can't tell anything from here. Everything looks the same, but we'll see a pretty significant difference if I set a breakpoint. All right, so let's go down into our validator. And let's go to this method here, isValidateAval. So now we're going to break there, and now let's run it with an invalid value and see where we break. Okay, so first we broke in the service. That's where we just throw an argument out of range exception. Okay, here's the second time where we throw a fault exception. Now, here we are at the fault, our little validation code. Where does that get called from? Go to the call stack, and you notice here, look at this, it's all coming from the web app. There's where we click the button, here's where we invoke, right here, and then where we do the set. Okay, so we didn't call the service at all. All of this validation is now happening in the web app before we send the data. And we get our error back, and our error handling still works the same way because we're handling a fault exception. Now, some people might say, well, Ron, you know, because it's part of the web app, couldn't it throw the argument exception? And at first I thought, yeah, I could, but then the more I thought about it, this is still a boundary, right? It's still a boundary. The foo type is really a type that belongs to the service world. Now, it happens to be executing in the web side, you know, in the sender side, but it's really a type that belongs to this other world. So I think we are still crossing a boundary here, and we still should get the fault exception. And the beauty of that is that our fault exception handling works exactly the same way, whether or not the client does the validation before it sends, or if the server does the validation and throws the fault exception back. Whew. Pretty cool, huh? Now, you know, like I said, this might not be, you know, your cup of tea. And I produced a sample here that's pretty tricky. There's a lot of moving parts. And, you know, we always hesitate to produce tricky samples because, you know, people go, wow, I couldn't understand that sample. And so you can see here that I've got four projects, including unit tests here that you can check out. And so you can see how the whole thing works. I didn't go through everything because there's a lot of information here. But, you know, it's a proposal. It's an idea. If you think it helps, I hope you'll find it helpful. For Endpoint TV, I'm Ron Jacobs.